This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Archaeologists say it's not the artifact, but what surrounds it that can tell you most about how ancient people lived. But how do you pay attention to what your ancient to that when your ancient site of interest is underwater? Today we'll talk with a man leading a team of Texas archaeologists working on a site on the floor of the Silver River near Ocala. And we'll find out why their findings could have big implications for other artifacts that were found at the same site back in the 1970s. And near the end of our show, we'll share an update about the drowning of Snooty, the beloved 69-year-old manatee at the South Florida Museum, with new details about what happened to the famous marine mammal. But first, as his time in the governor's seat comes to a close, a Treasure Coast reporter looks back at how Rick Scott has handled environmental issues. While he hasn't jumped into the race for a Senate seat in 2018, he hasn't ruled it out either, which makes a tally of his actions as governor that much more crucial. They could potentially be campaign points. As far as an environmental record, reporter Isidore Rangel looked back to when Scott's reign as governor began back in 2010 to see what's changed and whether those changes are positive or negative for the environment. Isidore, thanks for being part of the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We reached out by phone and email to Governor Scott's office and did not get a response to an invitation to be part of this show. We are talking about Governor Rick Scott's record on the environment with the reporter who researched and wrote a recent piece asking if he is a, quote, friend or foe to the Florida environment. What do you think? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Isidore, your story ran with the headline, "Is Governor Rick Scott a Friend or Foe of the Environment?" Looking at the data that you compiled, were you able to come up with a conclusion to that?
Well, I think so far it's been sort of a mixed record. We kind of left it up to readers to make up their own mind. Obviously, some readers care more about the Everglades. Others care more about regulations. But overall, I think we got to put Governor Scott's tenure into perspective. You know, he was a businessman before he became governor. He was elected in 2010 during the Tea Party wave. He's all about small government and making Florida a better state for businesses. And that plays into how he has treated environmental regulations in terms of gutting at all times state agencies that has harmed the environment. We also looked at the Everglades, which is important to South Florida, and we see that he has done a few good things. He put $90 million to raise the 10 Miami Trail in Miami that allows more water to flow into the Everglades. Also helps with discharges east and west into the Caloosahatchee and St. Lucie Rivers. It's kind of mixed.
Yeah, but with millions of dollars flowing to the Everglades restoration, do you think that using that, Governor Scott will say that he's a champion for the environment?
If I can take a guess, if he runs for the Senate against Bill Nelson, you know, he signed a bill this year, which was the Florida Senate President's bill to curb discharges into the Lake Okeechobee, into the St. Lucie and the Caloosahatchee rivers. And Governor Scott signed that law. Obviously, it wasn't his initiative, but he has his signature on this law and another law that was signed in 2016 to dedicate a fund for the Everglades. Although these are not initiatives that came from his office, per se, but he can certainly claim credit for those, you know, because the governor has the power of veto whether he initially wanted that particular bill or not.
And it was interesting because you started your piece, your written piece, with a mantra of jobs, jobs, jobs that Governor Scott has. But one thing that he did do in the environmental sector is cut jobs. Can you tell me about his actions in gutting water management districts and what impact that's had?
Yeah, so one of the very first things that he did, along with the legislature, was mandate that the water management districts cut their tax collections. As you know, water management the districts have the ability to levy property taxes. So when they did that, that was a huge blow to water management districts. If you look at the South Florida Water Management District, which is, I believe, the largest in the state, its budget in 2017 is smaller than its budget in 2006. So, and water management districts do a lot, from Everglades restoration to issuing permits. So when they have less money, a lot of environmentalists claim that no matter how much money you put into Everglades and Springs, if the water management districts don't have money to function, that also affects the environment. And that, I think, has been probably one of the issues that environmentalists have criticized the governor the most for.
So the money's been approved to go to these places, but there aren't people there to put it into play.
Yeah, so basically, if you're cutting their budgets, they have to cut their staff. They have to cut programs, and that affects a lot of the restoration efforts as well.
Mm-hmm. And another thing that your article points out is the steep drop in the number of cases that were opened by the Department of Environmental Resources, Environmental Protection, I'm sorry. Were you surprised by those numbers and how much they dropped off? I mean, it's 75%.
Yeah, that's very drastic. I actually didn't know it was 75%. But I've heard throughout the years from many environmentalists that basically the DEP and the water districts, they're basically looking the other way when polluters want to get a permit. It's a lot more streamlined, and that's good for business, which is like you said it yourself, that's the governor's, that's what he came into office for, was to create jobs and to make it easier for businesses. But then environmentalists are upset because if it's easier to get a permit or if it's easier just to get rid of an enforcement case, that affects the environment, makes it easier for polluters to pollute. And he's faced a lot of criticism because of that.
So how did the DEP explain that drop?
So basically, when we reached out to them, they said, it was basically because polluters or the regulated entities are doing their job in complying with the regulations. But it is very curious that Governor Scott gets elected, takes office in 2011, and then right after he takes office, the enforcement cases start to drop. There was a slight increase in 2016 or 2015, but it's been a downward trend since he got elected.
So overall, since he got elected from 2010 to now, the number of cases opened by the DEP dropped by 75%. And
yes.
Essentially, the DEP, I mean, do they kind of serve as the environmental watchdog for the state?
That's basically their job. Their job is to implement the Clean Water Act. You have the EPA, which oversees sort of the DEP, but their job is to, I guess their name says it all, is the Department of Environmental Protection. And obviously a lot of it is also delegated to the water districts, which have less money to operate with. So they're trying to do a lot. They're trying to do the same with a lot less resources than they had in the past. And if you remember, in 2012, I believe the DEP gutted its staff and fired a lot of veterans and people with a lot of institutional knowledge, and that also caused a lot of criticism from the environmental community.
We are talking about Governor Rick Scott's record on the environment. What do you think? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. And you mentioned earlier about the water management districts, and there was a big push in 2016 that you reported in which a tax cut was urged by Tallahassee into the South Florida Water Management District. It wound up saving taxpayers $3 on a $100,000 valuation of a home. So a homeowner of a $300,000 house had saved $9. That wound up costing the South Florida Water District $21 million, and the district's executive director quit. Has Scott said that he felt that that was worth it?
Yes, for Scott, anytime you cut taxes, he believes that that's good for Floridians and businesses. A lot of times when you look at the real impact, like you said, $3 on a tax bill, you know, I think it's up to the readers. Do they feel that they want a smaller government that's collecting less of their tax dollars, or do they want a government that maybe collects a little more and perhaps can do a little more for the environment in other areas? But Rick Scott has always pushed the legislature to cut taxes in all areas, not just the water district. So he wants a smaller, leaner government, which a lot of times in many people's views, it clashes with protecting the environment.
Yeah. And can you explain a little bit, part of your research went into the Florida Springs. What kind of restoration is happening at Florida Springs? And how does that factor into the overall environmental picture?
Yeah, well, the legislature in the past couple of years has put more money into springs restoration. A lot of it is because of a law that was passed last year that dedicates a fund for the Everglades, but it also has a fund for springs. And there have been a lot of people in the legislature who have advocated for more springs funding. And, you know, as a lot of times the governor takes credit, but the legislature plays a huge role. So, and the governor has also pushed for more springs funding. So it's gotten a little better. But, you know, Florida has so many springs. It's hard to tell whether that's enough money or not. I'm sure that people who love springs would like to see more. But it seems that they put a little more money into this area. So we've seen somehow of a positive change.
And it also ends up becoming a bit of a tourist attraction as well.
Exactly.
Tell me a little bit about the Florida Forever funding.
Yes, Florida Forever. I've been covering the legislature for a few years now, and every year is the same fight. You know, the environmental and the conservation community, they want more funds going into Florida Forever. Florida Forever basically is the land conservation program of the state. It buys land for conservation areas, parks, trails. Basically, the intent is to set aside land before it gets developed. And, you know, as you know, Florida keeps growing and growing. So in 2014, voters approved Amendment 1, which sets aside money for land conservation. But the legislature hasn't put a lot of money into the program. And Scott, when he took office in 2011, zeroed out the funding for Florida Forever. And it's grown a little bit this year again, however. They zeroed out funding for Florida Forever again. And again, there was a lot of, you know, letters sent to the governor's office and to the legislature. Obviously, the legislature sets the budget and not the governor. The governor has the power to lobby for specific items and veto, of course. But at least in my experience this year, he didn't really say much publicly about increasing funding for Florida Forever.
And I want to backtrack a little bit and talk a little bit more about the Department of Environmental Protection. With the steep drop in the number of investigations that they opened since 2010, during your reporting, you also talked with a person who used to work with the Department of Environmental Protection. What did they have to say about that drop?
Yeah, I spoke with Jerry Phillips. He actually did the study that showed the drop in drop in enforcement cases by 75%. What do you often hear from people who used to work there and from environmentalists is that there is a sort of it's an atmosphere to help businesses get permits faster and to I guess with less oversight of the environmental regulations. A lot of times you hear about people who are claim at least that they were told to look the other way or not really pursue particular enforcement cases. Of course, we didn't go so much into that in our reporting because a lot of it is what people are saying. It's hard to verify what someone said in a private conversation.
It really
but
is.
I've definitely
yeah, I mean,
heard that from several.
Especially when it's a spoken corporate culture instead of something that's written down as a mandate. It's just kind of
exactly.
Hard to nail that down.
Yeah.
Do you foresee the person who originally did that that numbers investigation, Jerry, I think is the name that you said?
Jerry Phillips.
Yeah. Do you foresee him looking deeper into that?
Well, he's part of an organization, and it's the acronym is PEER, and they have a lot of good resources online for those who want to look for it. But they do studies on enforcement of environmental regulations And they keep pushing. I mean, that's been sort of the struggle between the environmental community and Governor Scott. They've been sort of at odds since he took office. They don't really see him as a pro-environment governor, although he claims otherwise. And a lot of Republicans say that he's done more for the Everglades than any governor before him. So, you know, it's hard to you know, judge his record. I mean, without, you know, looking at each specific program, but they keep going after him. I don't think the environmental community is very happy with Governor Scott.
Yeah. So last year, after a sinkhole at a Polk County phosphate mine dropped more than 200 million gallons of contaminated water into the Florida aquifer, Governor Scott instituted a new rule that was requiring quick notifications of the public in the event of such spills. That rule was overturned in the court system. What do you think about that issue? Was he trying to be a friend of the environment on this one?
He's certainly, I think that he was at least claimed he was doing the right thing and forcing polluters to notify. That was a huge, kind of a scandal for the DEP because I believe it took them 3 weeks to notify the public about this sinkhole. And it caused a lot of people were upset, and Governor Scott actively worked to push for this new law, which was signed, I believe, this year. So that's one of, I guess, I don't think anybody says that that was a negative thing. It was certainly something that's seen as positive. But still, I think it's such a large record. You see good and bad in his record. Like with most politicians is, you know, you're trying to balance different interests and your own philosophy of having a small government. A lot of times, like I said, that crashes with, you know, having a stronger, you know, government that enforces regulations.
Mm-hmm. And then the article ended with an invitation for readers to vote on whether they felt that Scott was a friend or foe of the environment. In that survey so far, 54% have said foe, 36% say friend, and of the 10 comments on the end of that survey, all 10 would fall solidly in the foe category. Were you surprised at that kind of response?
No, I wasn't. I think that's, I think Governor Scott, I think he's been more of a jobs governor, and I think the environment, a lot of times, he has brought it to the forefront. For example, when he was running for re-election, he came to Stewart, which is where we're based on Treasure Coast newspapers, and he unveiled his environmental plan. But a lot of times, you see, he goes on tours to tout how many jobs have been created since he took office. He goes to companies that are opening in Florida. He's been all about jobs. A lot of times, he isn't really focused on the environment, and that makes sense. Jobs in many surveys is the number one concern of voters, especially if he runs for the Senate. I believe he's going to run on that platform. But in Florida, with so much water, the environment still is a concern for many voters.
I think it's a concern on all sides.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of those bipartisan. Are there any other big takeaways from Governor Scott's environmental record that you weren't able to get into your story?
Oh, yeah. There are many things that, you know, if we had more time and resources, we would like to look into. I want to see what he's going to do in his last year, if there's going to be more funding for Florida Forever. Like you said at the beginning of the show, it's his last session, started in January. But I wish we had more time just to dig into the culture at the DEP and see, you know, we hear, you know, bits and pieces of stories of people who work there, and they say, you know, oh, yeah, we're told to look the other way. And like I said before, it's very, very hard to pin that down because a lot of times these are not written communications. These are conversations. So I wish sometimes it's to be a little fly on the wall in the DEP headquarters and see what actually goes on there.
A fly on a wall with a tape recorder. That would be interesting. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now, but I want to thank our guest, reporter Isadora Rangel. Thanks for taking the time to be part of today's program.
Thank you so much.
Coming up next, Snooty the Manatee, and a mainstay of the South Florida Museum for nearly 70 years, drowned in a tragic accident this weekend. We'll talk with museum officials with new details about what happened to Snooty and what's next for the museum's manatee program. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.